Speedway's regular meeting of September 1st, 2021. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
We go on to the approval of the agendas. Can I have a motion to approve today's agenda?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone against it, say nay. All in favor, have it. So motion approved. Next is awards and presentations. I call on Brian to please handle this item.
Yes, Madam Chair. We've got a couple items under awards and presentations tonight. The first is the presentation of an IAAP, International Association of Administrative Professionals Award. And here to tell us about that is Cindy Herrera, Vice President, Human Resources.
Good afternoon, everybody. Nice to see y'all. Okay. All righty. I am here today to present to you the International Association of Administrative Professionals, IAAP, 2021 Employer Award. In order to be eligible for this award and nomination, a long list of criteria had to be met, some of which included encourage administrative pool to obtain and maintain the Certified Administrative Professionals, CAP designation, encourages and supports professional learning opportunities, fosters a workplace environment where administrative professionals have advanced their careers with this designation, demonstrates diversity and inclusion in the workplace, just to name a few. At the time of the award submission, KUA's administrative assistant pool had 100% CAP designations. This designation requires a lot of time and dedication in studying to pass the exam and also to maintain it. At this year's IAAP virtual conference held in mid-July, included over 1,500 companies from 70 countries. Brian Horton, our president and general manager, had the honor of receiving this award on KUA's behalf. KUA CAP designees were also recognized in the Office Pro magazine September 2021 edition as the IAAP Employer Award winner. I am proud to recognize our certified administrative professionals by name that are all with us today in person and also by Zoom. So if I could, I'm going to call your name out. If you could please stand. If you're in Zoom, hopefully we'll be able to see you. If you could wave, that'd be great. Yay. Here we go. Awesome. Thank you, Jeff. Zoraida. All right, first, Carol Augustine, Information Technology. Hey. Terry Biller, Operations. Please stand. Margie Boyles, Executive. Jennifer Grease, Finance and Administration. Christine Josephs, Customer Service. Yomari Medina, Operations. She's by Zoom. Sandra Morris, Human Resources. Sandra. Leticia Rivera, Executive. Roxana Rodriguez in Operations, Zoom. Don Rowe, Operations. And Robin Simmons, Finance Administration. And last but not least, Zoraida Velez, Information Technology, right over there. So, special thanks. A huge award to be recognized, and thank you to Terry Biller for coordinating all that, because it was a lot to submit and she was interviewed and what have you. So thank you all again so much, and we got the award here to present to the chair. Thank you.
Well, Brian.
Thank you so much, and congratulations, everyone. We're very proud of you.
Yes. was just going to say that the award is just a true reflection of the professionalism within KUA. There's not too many other organizations that would have. It's difficult what they did. It takes a lot of their own time at home and so forth. This is not something they're doing between working hours as a rule. So I'm very proud of everyone that's on this in this organization.
As are we. Thank you.
That's the magazine where they are featured.
Next. Madam Chair, we've got three other items under award and presentation. Claremore here? Oh, there you are. Does she look familiar?
Yes, she does.
This is our 2020 Employee of the Year. And then we're recognizing her for another achievement this afternoon. Claremore just received her master's in business analytics from Ohio University. So, congratulations.
Yes. Claremore, congratulations. That's wonderful.
Yes.
Is it? No, it's over here. I'm sorry. It's over here.
It's somewhere.
Did you see this?
Yeah.
The auditorium.
Mr. James Scott. We're recognizing James for 5 years of service. KUA. He is a power plant mechanic operator in our operations department. Congratulations, Greg. And Mr. Alvin Fred, come on up here. Alvin is our employee of the month for September 2021.
All right.
Alvin, one of your employees had this to say about you. Alvin is such an important part of the substation team and to KUA. He goes above and beyond to ensure that he can do the job at the highest level. Alvin is very eager to learn and apply his training to help others. An example of all of this is the fact that he took courses on his own time to learn air conditioning repair, and if needed, in an emergency situation, he can troubleshoot AC issues which provides for a quicker resolution. He is smart, efficient, and to call him a great asset would be an understatement. I agree, Alvin. Congratulations on being KUA 2021 and September 2021 Employee of the Month. Thank you. I'd like to introduce you to our board. Beginning with our chair, Ethel Arvina.
Alvin, in recognition of your commitment and service to KUA and its customers, here you go.
Appreciate it.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Here's a nice shirt for your boardroom.
I really appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Director Sanchez.
Congratulations. Here's your free parking, just like in Monopoly.
Director Van Meter.
Congratulations. Thank you for your service. And this is
you,
one day
for
pay.
Right.
One day off.
Yeah.
This must be the pay.
That's the pay. This is the real check. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And Mayor Gonzalez.
Congratulations. I don't know what's in the envelope.
That's something good.
Yes.
Good job.
Okay, we go on to the next item. Is here the audience? Is there anyone in the audience who wants to address the board? Hearing none, we go on to the next item. Consent agenda.
Make a motion to accept.
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Very good, motion approved. We go on to public hearing. There's nothing there. Informational presentations. Brian?
Yes, Madam Chair. We have one informational presentation this afternoon, and I'm going to ask Tiffany Henderson, our Director of Corporate Communications, to come and introduce our guests from Junior Achievement of Central Florida.
Good afternoon. We have with us today Karen Revels, President and CEO of Junior Achievement of Central Florida. Their mission is to inspire and prepare young people to succeed. Junior Achievement has received $13,500 in sponsorship funds from KUA in this current budget year. And with that, I'll turn it over to Karen Revels.
Thank you. Good afternoon. First, thank you on behalf of the students that we serve in Osceola County. That literally would not be possible without your financial support. And as we talk a little bit in the next 8 minutes, I'd like to share some of that impact that you all have really made possible. And can I just see a show of hands of who has actually gone out on behalf of KUA to the schools and done junior achievement programming? Awesome. I actually should let you come up and speak then about the impact that you have when you go out into the schools and see the students. Our vision at Junior Achievement of Central Florida is that all graduating students in Central Florida are financially literate, grounded in free enterprise, they have leadership, entrepreneurship principles, and that they're ready for the workforce. And part of what we do is inspire students in your backyard to understand the job opportunities that exist here in their backyard. Our purpose is that we inspire and prepare young people to succeed in our global economy. Our JA programs prepare students to succeed, whether they're going college or career. We have certification programs so that they're ready for the workforce right out of high school. And then we also are teaching in the classroom about how finances impact your life and helping them make stronger choices with their financial finances so that they're responsible at every stage of their life, honing their entrepreneurship skills and launching thriving startup businesses is another big piece of what we do. And really having an understanding of the free enterprise system in the United States, right? That's what sets us apart from some of our neighboring countries, is that we're grounded in free enterprise. And so our programs work in a few different ways. We have our traditional programming where, you know, those of you of us that are my age remember, you know, the volunteer goes into the classroom, they teach a worksheet, and then they leave. And we call that our traditional programming, where we go in one day and we touch as many kids in the school as we can with what we do, and then we go out, right? But we've really evolved a lot since those days of JA, and we have JA in a day where an entire company can designate employees to go into one school on one day, all wearing the company shirts, and really make an impact with those children. We also have JA Inspire, and I have to tell you, this is our signature program, and it's here in Osceola County, and it is at the Heritage Park. And it's a career fair because our research shows in eighth grade is when children are making decisions about their future. And if they know there's other opportunities that they're not aware of, eighth grade is kind of the time to hook them. And so we have a career fair, just like we would do for adults. We do it for eighth graders. And companies come out, and you all have participated in this, so we're very thankful for that. But it's a really great way to interact with students. I think you brought the bucket trucks in the past out to the site, and they get to see and ride it and touch it and learn about all the great opportunities that KUA has for them. We also have Finance Park Virtual, which is a half-semester program that's aligned with state standards that helps walk kids through those financial decision processes. In Osceola County specifically, through our traditional programming, we have since 2018, we've served 3,250 kids in Osceola County. Our JA Inspire program that's at Heritage Park has served 15,000 Osceola County students. Our Finance Park Virtual has served 12,000 Osceola County students. And our really premier education model, our 3DE education at Osceola High School, which is a four-year cohort education program where students study different companies in the community and learn about them. And you all have participated in that as well. We have served 415 students that have done a deep dive into, they spend 5 weeks studying your company and doing a presentation. None of that would be possible without your support. These are some photos of the JA Inspire that was here in Osceola, just so you can kind of get some visual of your community participating in that. And then we have volunteer engagement through the classroom.
Guys, keep it down. Pardon me?
What? Okay. through the classroom, job shadowing, leadership council.
God, I'm so sorry.
We have an advisory board. Sorry. And we actually have an Osceola board, and we are looking to grow that. And so I welcome, and, you know, if we'd like to have someone from KUA as part of that, that would be amazing, because we're really trying to see how can we even better impact the students here in your backyard. To be honest, Osceola is our model county for all of Central Florida because of our partnership with the school district, with companies like yours. You know, I hope every other county would aspire to do what we do here. We have some great events, and you all have been very supportive of that. But I'd like to open it up for any questions. I'm fairly new as the CEO, so I've been on the job 6 weeks, so don't throw any too hard ones, anything too hard over. Yes, ma'am.
Do you all solicit volunteers from the community to work with you all?
Yes, we do. We welcome volunteers. One thing that we had an Osceola County board meeting this morning, and one of the things that we were talking about is how do we grow that volunteer base here, right? And so we're looking to grow our board, and then maybe we could do a kickoff, a volunteer kickoff, to see about if getting other companies engaged. But yes, we welcome anybody to come and participate. Yes.
I just want to say what a great job you're doing, because I went to the fair, and I was also I went to see a program where you have students learning bank skills in the high schools, and I think it's great.
Oh, thank you.
Because not everybody wants to go to college.
Right.
And this is opening doors for the youth to see there's other things that they can look forward to. And I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Really quick, one of the most exciting things I think we do is through that 3DE case challenge, where we take kids from Osceola High School and we take them out into the workforce and we show them what is a manufacturing, you know, what does a job in manufacturing look like? And they tour the manufacturing plant, or they would go to Disney and learn about the jobs that aren't the things that they would immediately think about, right? That they could go right into right after high school. So thank you. But we can't do it without your support, so we appreciate it.
So I remember in fifth grade, I went through junior achievement when I went to Cypress Elementary School. How they did it back then was they had a team come in and they would do a presentation. Then they would all give us junior achievement pens, mm-hmm. but they were all dismantled.
Oh.
So they said they divided us in groups, who can put these together the fastest. Our team did an assembly line and we had it done the fastest. Then they took us on a field trip to, I don't even know where, I can't remember at this point, where it was a fictitious place of living, and everyone was assigned jobs. Like, there was a pharmacy, there was, you know, a Blockbuster, grocery stores.
You went to Tampa.
Probably, it was far. And I was the manager of Eckerd's in fifth grade. But I remember it making a lasting impression because they had to teach us how to fill out a check.
Yes. Most
kids today don't even know what a check is or how to fill one out.
That,
how to balance books.
That simulated city is what we're missing. The closest we have is Tampa. And my 3 to 5 year plan is that we have that here in Osceola County. That city where
made
students...
Made a lasting impression, let me tell
my
you.
My daughter said the same thing. She went to school in Orange County, and that was the only thing she remembers of 12 years of education is going to that
so, bravo. City.
So I'm going to get you involved when we go to launch that, okay?
Any other questions, anyone?
Thank you.
Great job.
Well, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you. And we look forward to our continued partnership together.
Thank you.
That's it, right?
Old business. I guess we don't have any new business.
Chair, Madam Chair, there are two new items of new business this afternoon. The first, approval of award of contract for concrete pads and sleeve. And here to tell us about that is Kevin Crawford, Vice President, Finance and Administration.
Thank you, Brian. If I could just depend on real quick on the junior achievement, we were involved, our department, with the 3D case challenge. And with the Osceola High School, we gave them the case challenge was there's a storm coming, and they had to decide how much resources to dedicate, knowing that there's an opportunity cost, and they had to make a decision tree. And we challenged them. They had to do presentations in PowerPoint. They're way better at PowerPoint than we are, by the way. And we were just astounded at what we saw in the results. But a tremendous amount of fun and enthusiasm. But I'm really excited to be a part of that. And it was a lot of fun. KUA was represented really well, we think. So thank you for that opportunity to serve. So on to my actual item here. As Brian said, this is an award of a contract for concrete pads and sleeves, and this is a fairly standard set of equipment that we use out in the field. As you can imagine, it's as described. KUA utilizes these precast concrete pads and sleeves in our distribution system. The pads, as you would expect, raise the pad-mounted equipment and transformers, pad-mounted transformers above the site elevation to prevent environmental damage and to keep them above the water line. And then also the pads and sleeves also help to protect the equipment from environmental conditions in the field. So they really serve a twofold purpose. The next slide is a little bit of a visual on what that looks like. You can see to the right there, the concrete pads are basically like what you'd expect. They just sit underneath the transformers. And in FY20, we used about 275 of those in the distribution system. And then the sleeves to the left are also prefab concrete. They're used for junction boxes in plazas and in substations, and we used about 145 of those in FY20. And so the time had come to renew our contract to go out and perform a solicitation, which we did. And based on the results of the solicitation, staff is recommending that we move forward with the most responsive bid that we received, which is coincidentally with the current provider, Oldcastle Infrastructure, who submitted the lowest cost and the most responsive submittal, meeting the required specifications. And so given that, our staff recommendation today for this equipment is that the board approve the award of the contract number AR21050-CV to Oldcastle for the purchase of concrete pads and sleeves, to authorize the president, general manager, to execute any necessary contractual documents to that effect. And we would appreciate that, and I stand for questions.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Are these replacement or new or both?
I think that's part of the line extension, the expansion, but I believe we also do use them. And I think Larry's in here.
It's replace. It's expansion of the facilities.
So it's for new growth?
Yes, ma'am.
Any other question, anyone? Do I hear a motion?
And any replacement that may be a part of damage, like if a truck hit a transformer or something like that.
Make a motion to accept the recommendation of staff.
Everyone in favor?
Aye.
Motion approved.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Item number 2.
Chair. The second... The P piece of new business is approval to utilize sponsorship dollars for KUA's Good Neighbor Fund contribution. And here to tell us about that is Vice President of Customer Service, Susan Postens.
Good afternoon. We love to talk about the Good Neighbor Fund. So I shared this with you last month, so very briefly, I wanted to remind you of some of the assistance that our customers have been receiving over the last year throughout the pandemic. And what I wanted to point out was that these particular sources of funding always have expiration dates. So it's whether it's the LIHEAP funding or whatever funding they're using, at the end of each budget year, it's deplete, you know, either it's used or it's returned, and then they start a new year with a new bucket of money, we'll call it. So these all have dates where it expires. So these, we typically, the social agencies typically try to use these first, prior to the Good Neighbor Fund. One of the big benefits of the Good Neighbor Fund is that it never expires. So if a customer can qualify to use this funding, this is the funding that the agencies will go to first. So here I shared with you last month as well, because today is the first. I don't have all the new numbers for August. These were the number of participants. We're actually edging very close to 6,900 customers participating and the customers that are being assisted. The board has taken action on the Good Neighbor Fund in the past. They have increased the KUA match on three occasions, 2006, 2010, and 2020. These were all times when the community was experiencing some unusual hardships. In addition, last year, the board initiated and determined to transfer or decided to transfer $50,000 of unused sponsorship and their associated events, that funding to the Good Neighbor Fund due to COVID-19. So I want you to understand that the need still continues because this pandemic's been going on for a long time and there has been a lot of assistance out there. But what we find is that we still have a lot of customers that are struggling. Right now we have 3,377 payment arrangements that are active right now, equating to almost $800,000. So we have a lot of customers that are still in need. We're averaging over 5,000 payment arrangements a month. We are still needing to disconnect and interrupt service for some customers that are not paying. And with the Good Neighbor Fund, we don't put as many restrictions on these funds as LIHEAP and other funding that's available for customer assistance. In order to qualify for that assistance, it becomes tedious. There's a lot to it. You need to meet income level requirements and so on and so forth. The true value of the Good Neighbor Fund is that we don't put those restrictions on it. So if the social services people who we've assigned Council on Aging, if they deem that they have found someone that really needs assistance, but for one reason or another, they cannot qualify for those other funds, that's when they come to the Good Neighbor Fund. So the recommendation is, once again, due to COVID, we have some funding available that because of sponsorships and actually the events that were associated with those sponsorships, they've been canceled due to the pandemic. So the recommendation is to approve the transfer of $50,000 of sponsorship funding that has not been utilized due to COVID-19 during fiscal year 2021 to the Good Neighbor Fund.
Susan, a question. What does other companies are doing? Do you know?
They have a very similar program. Most companies have a similar program. Their match may be different. They may not match, but almost all utilities have a similar neighbor. A lot of them call it the Good Neighbor program. So
on your first slide, you had those on a brief, some type of letters, L, whatever.
LIHEAP. So that's low income. Okay. Housing Energy Assistance Program.
Okay.
So it's only for residential, and that's federally funded. And each year it either you use it or you lose it, and then it replenishes.
Who manages that?
Council on Aging has access to those funds. There are other organizations that actually have access to those funds as well. The majority of ours come through the Council on Aging. So if a customer comes to the Council on Aging for assistance, they will put them through the qualification process. If they qualify for LIHEAP, they definitely will use that funding first to assist them. If they don't qualify for LIHEAP, then they will look at the Good Neighbor Fund.
It sounds like the criteria is a little bit more difficult under those programs than obviously the programs we have. It sort of reminds me of the other federal program that they have for the supplement or helping out with rent subsidies and so forth, that they have billions of dollars still outstanding and people are being evicted. And to me, it makes no sense, but it's just the paperwork that entails. And it sounds like that might be happening there too.
It is, and that's the challenge that the county has had. You know, I keep reporting on how the county cares and how we've partnered with them. The paperwork is very onerous, and we've tried to assist them. They require a copy of the bill each month, and instead of making the customer find a way to scan it and get a copy to them, we're sending a copy of the bill directly to the county. So we're doing everything we can to try to help through those processes, but it's a lot.
Okay. So go ahead, Dwayne.
I noticed in some reading that the Council on Aging also has one called EHEAP. Do you have any idea what that one is?
Yeah, that one's specifically for seniors.
Seniors. Okay.
Yes. So, and again, it's federal. It's a bucket of federal funding, and they work their way through that first.
Raymond?
So I'm to understand it correctly. Council on Aging helps us with the Good Neighbor Program, but is it more of a prerequisite that if there's funds in LIHEAP or CARES through the county before touching the Good Neighbor Fund, or are there instances where they just go directly to Good Neighbor Fund?
We don't put restrictions on them. You know, one of the reasons that we've partnered with them is that we know that social services is not our area of expertise. So we basically have handed them the Good Neighbor Fund to manage. Now, obviously, we get a lot of communication back and forth about every customer that receives the funding and how much, and it's applied directly to their account and so on and so forth. So we have a lot of checks and balances, but we don't put those restrictions on them. So typically they go to LIHEAP first because they know those expire and Good Neighbor doesn't.
Got it. Thank you.
Is there a limit to how many times they can be, the same people can pull on this fund?
Not on Good Neighbor. We have
LIHEAP, I think there is.
Yes, there is.
Thank you. So it's a great program, and I make a motion to accept the recommendation.
Second.
Do I have a second? Second. 2 seconds. Okay. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
No one against it. Motion approved.
Thank you.
We go on to staff reports. Item K.
Madam Chair, two staff reports this afternoon, the first being the quarterly financial report. Mr. Kevin Crawford.
Thank you, Brian. Brian said in our staff meeting, as we go through dry runs, Kevin's going to give his boring financial report. Always hurts my feelings, obviously, because, you know, when I give you an exciting financial report, that's a very different day, right? So boring financial reports, I love, because no surprises.
That's right. That's right.
So today will be no different, and this is the reporting of our third quarter fiscal year results for the period ending June 30th, 2021. And so we'll jump right into good news all around. As you can see, our megawatt hour sales are about 3.4% over budget and 3.1% over the prior year's actual. I don't think that it's a surprise to anybody in here why that would be the case. It's been primarily very warm, and that is all driven about 70 to 80% by weather. And so the warmer it is, obviously, the higher the consumption of the megawatt hours, and so that speaks to why the sales increase for that particular graph. So that is.
Okay, and are you saying that 30% is new business?
It's a combination of new, yes, ma'am. That's a general. We look at that every year, but about 80 or so percent is probably driven more by weather. That's why when you look at those prior years, and you may see why it was like 2016, for instance, was an outlier year because it was so extraordinarily hot, and that's why you see that big bump. It wasn't like an increase or an influx in the number of customers. It was particularly weather-driven. So I expect that this next couple months, as you've seen, we've broke a record, I believe, for actually megawatt hours this past month, so that will contribute to a very strong usage as well. But very good question. Thank you. So then also on the good news front, we have achieved a positive net income while still being able to maintain all of the board's fiscal policies, which we have listed there. And so that is a positive thing to report, as well as being able to achieve the bottom one-third goal of being in the 1,000 kWh residential rate, bottom one-third across the state. And so we are happy to report that. So all of the goals achieved that the board has addressed us to achieve. This is sort of just a graphical display of how we've used our rate stabilization fund, and you can see that the big yellow block is primarily draws to the general fund to fund capital projects and efforts out of the rate stabilization, and then there's a small deposit held at FMPA that we were able to make because of our fuel expense being a little bit lower than we thought. So we can put that in there to offset fuel expenses in the future if they climb. But we have had a fairly low fuel expense environment, so we've been able to put that money aside for future consumption. And then that gives us a net draw on the rate stabilization of about $2.5 million, as you can see there. Then moving into the individual line item detail, you can see the metered sales revenue we had budgeted to be at $167.9 million. We actually exceeded that based on sales increases in megawatt hours, which is fairly commensurate at a 3.2% increase in overall. Our rate stabilization fund transfer, we expected to make a deposit of $366,000. We actually used $3.1 million, as I referenced on the previous page, and for those reasons that we discussed earlier. So a $3.7 million variance in the usage of rate stabilization, which actually serves to increase revenue because that's a deferred revenue that we then pull into recognized revenue. And so that bumps up the revenue numbers there. And then total operating revenue, if you add all this together, we end up at $137.1 million. We expected to be at year to date. And we actually were at $149, and largely that's attributable to use of rate stabilization and also reduced fuel expenses, which reduce our cost of power, COPA mechanism reduction. So a positive variance in terms of total operating revenue of about $12.6 million.
Will you talk about those other?
Oh, yes, and I'm sorry. Thank you, Brian. On the other operating revenues, Director Ortega had spoken at our last conversation about the other operating revenues. I think you'll see they're on line 70. I don't have them highlighted here. But that's a combination of different types of revenue sources, the two largest of which would be our service and fees, customer fees. And also we do receive a substantial portion based on our contract with FMPA. They do reimburse us for a portion of the O&M expenses at Kane Island, and that is part of our agreement with them through that project. And that's good for about maybe $1.5 million. We also do perform some outside contractual services, and we also do have some other credits from FMPA, retention and load credits, that put us in the additional $1 million range. So all those together comprise about that $4.5 million, the number that you see. Just a little bit more detail on that.
Kevin, a question.
Yes, ma'am.
So the money that we get back from FMMA, isn't that a reimbursement of expense? Is revenue? We consider revenue?
It is. Even though it is a reduction in expenses, we have to show it in revenue on the top of the income statement in the revenue line, but it serves to decrease the actual cost associated with the work that we do. And Larry, you can help me. I think it's around a 30%.
I thought it was reimbursement of expenses.
RAG?
which would be
yes.
net zero.
Yes.
30%, around $2 million a year.
And effectively.
I know, but we treat it as if it is revenue to us rather than reimbursement of expenses. Isn't it reimbursement of expenses?
It is, but it's a receipt from them, we have to book it on the revenue side. You're exactly right. The netting of those equates to the reduction that you're speaking of.
It should be
of.
Zero, right?
Yes, ma'am. That's exactly right. But we have to book it as a receipt through the revenue side and net that against the total expenses. So it's just the accounting mechanism of how we have to book it. But your presumption is correct. It effectively reduces those real costs by that 30% amount that you see. And it's just how we're our auditors require it to technically account for how that money comes back in. Excellent observation there as well. So that puts us at obviously then a positive variance of about $12.6 million for those total revenues on that side. And then as we look toward the purchase power, our biggest expense within the system, our demand charges, we'd budgeted to be at 51. We actually expended $46 million, and there's some levelized billing that FMPA is utilizing from a year or so back, and that gives us a positive variance there of about 4.7. Combined with some additional lower fuel expenses, where we had budgeted to be about 27, and we actually spent about 25.9 or 26. It's a positive variance, or actually less a fuel expense than what we'd anticipated. And so given that, we were able to make a deposit, as I spoke to earlier, to that rate stabilization fund held at FMPA for future use to reduce our fuel expenses whenever we can assist our customers to that end. Fuel and purchase power, then, when you net all of those lines above that together, we budgeted to be 85.6, obviously 79.4, a little bit less than that, so that's good news. Or a positive variance of $6.2 million. So that's, again, attributable largely to the fact that our fuel and purchase power is less than we budgeted given the low fuel environment that we currently exist in. Then netting those previous pages of revenue against the expenses that you see there at the line above, you come up with a budgeted operating revenue, less fuel and purchase power. We expected to be at $51.6 million. We're actually at $70.4 million. So that's a positive variance of $18.8 million, or 36%. And then we move then over into the O&M side. And look and see there, you can see the departmental variances, all positive, all well within expectations of what we would expect to see at this point in time of the year. The work hasn't progressed as fast in some of the line extensions and in the capital work, given the fact that, you know, with COVID and we've scaled some of that effort back, that may pick up by end of fiscal year, or it may not. We may see some of that rebudgeted in the next fiscal year. But nonetheless, those positive variances, which are effectively good news, but that's related to the fact that we have some position vacancies and the work has not progressed within those particular projects as fast as we had expected it to. And that brings our total departmental revenue, that the budget we expected to have expended at this point was 29.8, and we had only spent 25.4. So that's good for about a $4 million variance there. And then when you add all of those prior pages together and net that against our O&M departmental costs, we expected to have a change, our net operating revenue of 21.8. We actually had 44.9. And that's a positive variance in net operating revenue of 23.3. And then our final page, which is all of the other operating expenses, which Director Ortega had talked about in a prior meeting too. These are all fairly straightforward, fairly easy to predict, somewhat static across years and subject to the incremental additions that you would expect to see. Things like intergovernmental transfer, which are all formulaic. Taxes that we pay to the extent that we do to the PSC, are also formulaic. So those are all fairly easy to predict, and you don't get a lot of surprises on this page. With interest revenue versus where we expected to see, obviously our interest rate environment's a little bit low, and we've seen that, so there's a little bit of a variance there. But netting all of those together, our change in net position that we expected to see at this point in the year was about $1.7 million, or we call that net income here, change in net positions. We use those interchangeably. And then the actual, though, was about $24.5 million for a positive variance of $22.7 million for a positive variance there. And as we progress through the year, you know, we may end up using more of that rate stabilization or less thereof, and so that could have an effect on the bottom line. So, you know, very good news, but, you know, we have a few more months left, obviously, in the year, and we do expect sales to be representative of what we're seeing in the weather environment, so that could be very positive. But we also have to take a look and make sure that fuel expenses, you know, don't offset some of those increased revenues as they're likely to do sometimes. Investment portfolio, fairly straightforward here. Not a lot of change, about $141 million in our total portfolio at June 30th. Again, the largest percentage of that at the State Board of Administration and some of our shorter-term instruments. And then you'll see here, we did have a little bit of a blip. We had about a $4 million U.S. Treasury security that we sold. The market hit a peak within that portion of the yield curve, and we utilized that to get a gain, and the gain was about $22,000. And you can see the interest rate environment is so low that $22,000 of a gain had a pretty significant impact, unfortunately. So even with that, you're still looking at an annualized rate of, you know, less than, you know, 0.3%. So good news, but certainly some of you all remember interest rate environment being quite different than what we're in now. But still a very, very good news for us given the current conditions of the market and the rates of return that are available to us. And that's basically all I have with respect to financial statement information. I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you.
Questions?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And it wasn't boring.
I'm sorry.
It was not boring.
Thank you. I will take that to heart. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Kevin. Good.
Good job, Kevin.
Okay, so.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Item K2 is the Information Technology Semiannual Report. And mm-hmm. Here's Jeff Gray.
Hello, Board.
Hello.
Kevin's a tough act to follow. I'll do my best. FinTech is where we're going to start off, give you an update on what's been going on. Speaking of the financials, what usually happens with Kevin's group is that they are either in an audit or in a budget season. So I got this tiny window that's the summer where I can go and upgrade his systems and everything. And we are actually in the middle of that right now, upgrading our core financials, which is Microsoft Dynamics. It's a capital project that we're hot and heavy into actually testing now. So we're past that part where you got to get it built and get it going. We're actually testing and hoping to have it out in October, right when the audit kicks in, so because that's a very busy time for them. So that's going on. Right behind that will be, and I'll talk about that in a moment, but we have another project right on the heels of that that we also want to get done in the October time frame, if time permits. One of the other projects that we did, which is kind of an interesting one that I thought I would share with you, is the automation of check payments. There's a system work that's called EFT that we're using. And what was happening for years now, and this is all good because it's in the past and we're not doing it anymore, but for years we were hand printing about 10,000 checks in finance that went to customers in the forms of refunds when they close out their accounts, and also when we make vendor payments and so forth. So 10,000 hand-printed checks, if you would like this job, and they're all going to be hand-mailed to whoever they go to. And hopefully they don't come back, as you can imagine, when people are moving and things like that. And now you got to figure out where they are and so forth. So only 10,000 a year, not a big deal. So we were doing all of that by hand. We've now automated that. Those checks are not even printed on-site. They're done through the banking system. And so the tracking is there, the security is there, the controls are there, but we don't have that impact on our administrative staff, and they're not pulling their hair out anymore. So that's a great thing. But it was interesting to me when we studied the numbers. We were trying to add up, well, how many checks was it that it was, you know, over 10,000 and addresses going to 13 different countries. That's the business we're now doing at KUA. It's no longer just local Kissimmee, right? We have locations worldwide, so to speak, in terms of both where customers move to when they leave our territory and also some of our vendors who are maybe in Canada and so forth. But most of it is customer-driven. So that tells us a lot about where our customers come and go from when they move into our territory. And again, that data archiver project, which is right on the heels of the GP system. When we converted our Dynamics software, or to our Dynamics software, we came out of a system called HTE. And we did that in 2006 and 7 was the conversion year. That data has been growing and growing. And so you can imagine, as an IT guy, I'm getting nervous because the reports take longer. We can't back the system up as fast. We need to kind of purge off some of that data, keep it, but not necessarily step over it every day when we're running reports. And that's what the archiver is going to give us. It's a low-cost capital project. I think it's around $13,000. And it will actually be, like I said, running just soon after we get GP stood up and everything. So that's going to be great for them because he has folks that we have to kick them out at night. We have folks in there 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night running reports so they don't impact the rest of the system. So this will get them out of there and let them get on with their life and not have to wait for that report to finish. Moving along, let's talk a little bit about cybersecurity. In fact, quite a bit. I got 2 slides on this one, so bear with me because I have a lot to tell you. This little red yellow line here that you see is when we started. Remember, we went to this is the top organization in the country for cybersecurity, CISA. There, you know, there's the FBI, there's the IRS, and then there's CISA when it comes to protecting infrastructure. These are the guys who are the experts, and they publish all the basically the best practices and knowledge for the country. So we got on their good side because we were a utility, so we get services for free. We told you about that. And so one of the services they gave us was this weekly scan where they take every known vulnerability. Now, that doesn't mean that someone's breaking in. It means someone could, if they had the tools and the location and the means and the motive and the opportunity, if they had all those things, there's a possibility they could crack into your system. So they take everything that is known about breaking in, and then they look at our system and say, you have this type of server or that type of server. Here are the known vulnerabilities. And then they try to see if they line up. If they do, you get a little blip on this report. Now, that's a good thing because you'd want to know if there was something new. It's also important to know that a flatlined report, while it shows success in mitigation, which you can see as we go along the timeline there, we got better and better at it, but you're still going to get blips because things happen. There's a thing called deprecation, if you're familiar with this term, and it's when we say this is no longer valid, there's a new one out, don't use the old one. You might remember when the web went through this whole thing of having HTTPS or a little lock by the address on your URL because the old way wasn't secure anymore. And those are things of maturity that happen with security. So as those things occur, you'll get a blip, and it's just like literally it could have been 2 days ago. They just turned something off and said this is no longer current and there's a new one out, and so we get a hit. But we take our lumps on these reports because we want to track it. So that's what CISA has been doing for us, is keeping us honest and also keeping us aware of any risk. So we're doing really well there. That one little blip you see there back in July was actually a false positive, which we were glad to find out, though we were fine. They had just updated some of their software, and we got a false positive there. So we're doing really well. Again, there are going to be times when we'll have something on this thing. It's not a bad thing. That just means that we're staying active and we're scanning for everything that is known. Now, along with that, they also had a pen test available, which we took back in April. This was quite an undertaking. It took a while to get it scheduled. Again, it is free to us. But they came and did a penetration test where they try to break in using a lot of different methods that are out there, even social engineering and trying to guess people's passwords, you name it. They tried it. And here's the results of that. So out of everything that they did, again, 762 different points they tried to break in on, they found 6 places where we could make improvements. 5 of those have already been mitigated or in the process of finishing mitigation, and one is a vendor that has to write an update that we're waiting on. So we did really well. There were no critical items, which is always the biggest concern. And now we wait for them to come back and do an even harder test inside. One of the things that was interesting about this test was we allowed them in, and they gave us some software to install that we had to sign 1 million disclosures for. And then they tried to be like a hacker who had gotten in had access, like the best access, and was now trying to get out and kind of connect home to the bad guys and see what they can do. And we allowed all that to happen so they could see just how far they could get. And then they gave us recommendations on how to secure that even further. So this is the good stuff, you know. But again, I'm happy to report we had no critical items, and now we're just working through the recommendations for improvement. Now, on top of that, ever since the pipeline, which y'all heard quite a bit about because it was in our sector, but ever since the pipeline and just before that, the SolarWinds issue, there have been a lot more bulletins coming out of Washington where CESA is based. In fact, we went from maybe one or two alerts a month to two to three per day, and that hasn't stopped. I think maybe somebody got yelled at maybe in Washington that you're not producing these bulletins fast enough, and whether it's the latest alert of something that's happened in the wild, as they say, where someone's actually been hacked, or it's just there's a possibility that maybe, like I said, you know, all these ifs that someone could do it, a sort of a theoretical hack, even that, they come out. These are lengthy bulletins, and we get each one of them, and now we have decided to just deploy a case management system where we track every single one. We get it, we read it, we assign it to someone, and then we say when it's been closed out. If there's nothing to do, we record that. If there's something we needed to change, we record that as well, because there's way too many of them, and it would be easy to miss the one that we should have caught, right? So that's a whole bunch more work, but it's just cybersecurity is what it is. It's kind of strange because there's so much work that goes into it, but there's no real shiny object or new ability that I can show you that usually tech guys are. That's what we do, is we come and tell you all these new cool features that we have. Cybersecurity lacks all that. It's just protection. One of our senior technicians downstairs said it reminds him of baby-proofing a house, because the house was fine and functional before, but now that there's a baby, we're padding corners and we're changing everything and putting protector gear and locks and everything, all these different things for outlets. And why? Because the function has changed. The use of the room has changed. And in this case, that's the risk that we're trying to prevent. We're also preparing for the financial audit along with Kevin's group. They do a thorough IT sweep of everything that we're doing in terms of our controls. The finances depend on the quality of the IT, so it's sort of a pairing. And every year they ask for more and more. We used to do, I think we could do it in a day, and now it takes us about 2 weeks to get all the documents together. It's a big stack of things that the auditors go through to look at all of our procedures and so forth. But again, we've always come out really good on that. But that takes up a great amount of time as well, and that starts just in the next few weeks, actually. We're also expanding our end-user training program. Now, this you may be getting those emails where they look like they're legit, but if you click them, you're going to get a little leprechaun or something saying, aha, you fell for it. That's where we started at, but we're going to do a little more training where you actually get a little video telling you how to spot a fake email. This is one of the most important parts of cybersecurity, because it all comes down to that innocent person at work who clicks something, and now you got ransomware and $1 million click, as we call it. So the way to prevent that is to keep users on edge a little bit and help them learn how to spot something that's fake. It's good for them both at home and in the office place, but the end user is the weakest link. It's not the Russian hackers that you hear about on CNN. It's literally the person who innocently right next to you clicks something, and now it's in the network, right? So we do a lot to prevent that from even being possible, but we still have to train the user. So we're going to be expanding our training program for more videos, and we're going to probably build sort of a progressive treatment for those who just aren't getting it and they're clicking one time too many. They click once, okay, everybody can click it once, it's you're learning. Second time, third time, okay, now you're going to be automatically signed up for maybe a little 20-minute video on what you need to be looking for. Fourth time, fifth time, it might have to get a little more serious about your future career. And a lot of companies, believe it or not, are three strikes, you're out. If you click one time too many on these viruses, because the risk, right? If you launch the virus, everybody wants to know who did it and were they trained. So that's something that's coming as well. We may look at maybe not being more of an incentive to not click than to punish you if you click. But we do want people to get trained on this, because it's no joke when you get viruses or ransomware in your network. Moving along, this is the actual progress. I just lost my screen, sorry. This is the actual progress of our training program to date. That low number, that black line that you see going across the bottom there, is the number of people who actually, you know, fell for it and clicked the trick bait and so forth. That's a very low percentage, so that's a good thing for KUA. That makes our numbers look good. 5%, very far below the 35% average for utilities. A little scary that utilities are 35% likely to click on the wrong thing. So we're aggressive with our training, yes, but we would love to see that at 0 or 1%. And the only way to do that is to keep training more rigorously. So you'll see that again in incoming emails that you guys get, as just as well as everybody else. As far as coming soons, we're going to be adding more layers of security to our network. Again, more layers, more layers. It's all not a lot, no shiny objects. It's just all more security. MFA, or multi-factor authentication, you probably get this already with your bank. You go to log in, and all of a sudden you get a text notification that says, is that you? And you, yes, it's me, and now you can get in. Well, that's multi-factor authentication. Highly recommended, and now CISA has made it one of their standards for best practice. So we are moving into that zone where if you're on a VPN connection with KUA, you're going to get a push notification on your phone. We'll verify that. It'll also affect webmail for those of you who use webmail. And we're also going to apply it to our critical systems internally. Even though you're in the network and you should be here and you have all the rights and so forth, we're still going to require that just to make sure that it isn't someone who maybe wandered into the wrong office and happened to take advantage of an open system. So we're going to be doing that. We're looking at encryption of backups. It is a recommended practice, although we have a somewhat of a, I don't know if it's just a nerd debate, but we're like, well, if you can get to the backups, you can get to the primary, so why am I encrypting my backups? But it is a recommended practice. And then also, that CISA report that you saw, we've got an ability now, which is being stood up in the next week or so, where we can run that same test internally. This very thorough, every known vulnerability test can be run inside our own network by us. So we can focus it on a system, we can do attempted break-ins and so forth, all internally, and get reports and track our progress in terms of mitigation. So that's all coming. And we're looking at doing a risk assessment in the early spring, an RFP, to have an external agency come and do an IT assessment of our with a vulnerability scan and also a penetration test, just like we're doing now, but have a third party do that and then give a report to the board, some sort of deliverable. But that'll be an RFP process, and that takes time. We really need to finish up everything we're doing for finances audit right now, and then we can start on this one. So that's the timeline for that. On our AMI project, obviously very popular, very well received, both with customers and with our staff. I wanted to tell you a little bit about why automated reconnects, which is our new feature, is such a game changer for our customers. An automated reconnect, you've probably heard me mention this in the past of what we wanted to be able to do. Well, it's now live and it's running great. And it's the idea that you got home, let's say it's 10 o'clock at night, you forgot to pay your bill, okay, and your power's been cut. You missed all the notifications to pay for whatever the reason, and now you need to get your power back on. If you take out your phone and you pay your bill right then, your power is probably going to come on in all likelihood within a minute or two. No human intervention required. The system is looking for your payment. It sees it, and it restores power through the AMI network. That's all built and running, okay? And that was built internally. That wasn't something that came with AMI. We had to develop that a little bit. That's a real tribute to Chris Regal, our developer, and our developer extraordinaire downstairs in IT. So he got that all working. But why is that a game changer for the customer? Well, when you think of the quality of life, of how much you rely on power, and I've said this before, but your home is no longer just your home. It's your business. It's your home. It's your kid's school in some cases. It's also all the entertainment things that you can't go and do. So the home having power is essential to the quality of life. And we identified this back when we did our mission statements and we looked at some of the things that we thought KUA provided. It was quality of life is what electricity is equated to. It is the only service, really, when you think of, hurricanes and disasters, what do we use to say how bad is it? You know, what does the media always turn to? The number of people without power. Why? Because we know how essential that is. So having something that will reconnect your power quickly and efficiently without having to, I got to go and I got to make a payment, or it's too late at night, I got to wait till tomorrow and stay in a hot house, and all of that has been removed. And we're just probably a few weeks away, I'm hoping, where AMSCOT payments will get treated the same way. It's not likely that a customer will go to AMSCOT when their power has been cut. Usually they'll contact us directly. But if they make the payment over the phone, or they come in and pay in person, or they do it over their over their mobile device on e-bill, the power's coming on within about a minute. So we're real happy with that. Let's talk about text alerts and how that's changing payment behaviors.
How many people do we really reconnect like that a month?
How many people are getting reconnected? I don't know. I'd have to get that number. Do you have that, Susan?
Immediately reconnect that they pay.
Reconnected. Automatically reconnected.
I don't know how many a day would.
Is it a lot of people that pay and get reconnected like that? Or is it just a few?
Anyone that pays now will get reconnected.
Mm-hmm. No, but everybody that pays. They don't get disconnected.
No, you're talking about where they've been disconnected and after the disconnect and they pay, whatever the number of disconnects are, I would say the majority of them actually pay within 5 to 10 minutes, believe it or not, quite quickly. It isn't a long time, which actually we had to program for that because we were thinking it would be longer, but it's very fast. But the number of people paying is equal to the number that we disconnect usually in that day. There's very few that go probably more than a day of not having their power back on, unless they traced or something as a skip town. So let's talk a little bit about that interaction of those who actually take the conclusion all the way through to not paying until they're disconnected, because this is relevant to that. What you see here on this chart going left to right is the number of extensions that you heard about, with Susan telling you folks who need an extension, they need more time to pay. Now, each one of those, when you see as many as 8,000 on the left or even 5,000, is a lot. 5,000 is more than 1,000 a week, y'all. So that's up over 1,000 people a month calling KUA. They're initiating this and saying, I need more time to pay. So we're either talking to them on the phone, or in some cases they're doing it through the app where we have the button that says I need more time to pay. So, or they can do it through chat as well. But the customer is initiating that transaction, okay? So now we have an extension that we have to manage. We have to keep up with the fact that we've given them a few days, a week, whatever it is. In some cases, they're paying maybe pieces of the bill over time. There's no one simple one. They're all different. But that's a lot of transactions to keep up with for customer service. And what we've seen on that yellow line there at the bottom are the number of folks who actually did get disconnected. So you can see on the left there, that was you have 8,000, about 8,000, and here's 2,000 of those folks actually getting disconnected. So that's a big chunk of people in 1 month, mind you, who are letting it go through. They got disconnected, and now they got to come pay and go through everything we've just automated. But they do have to pay to get that power turned back on. Moving across, and it's a little tough with the size of this chart and everything to show the impact. If it was shaped a little different, you'd see it's a little more dramatic. But we see this decrease over time of folks who they're keeping their accounts current because it hurts them to not pay. First, their power goes off. Now it's harder to get an arrangement the next time you need one. You're going to pay extra fees. So we would like to keep that downward spiral from ever kicking in. Enter texting. Now, we started texting with outage management. That was the idea, was if your power goes off because of a storm, you can text out. And now we're texting you before you even text us and saying, we know your power's out, we're on the way. That's all great stuff. But what about this transaction? So we applied texting to those customers who were on, they're not on the cut list, but their payment is due tomorrow. We gave them a week ago, we said, we'll give you a week, right? So that's tomorrow when you're supposed to pay. Now, a lot of folks who are getting payment extensions and so forth, we don't know what's going on in their life. It could be a hurried time for them, and they forgot that's tomorrow. And now they meant to pay on time, but they just forgot. And if we send it in the mail and if we do all the other things and phone calls, it can get a little messy. So we started sending text messages to them just saying, just a reminder, not trying to harass you, just a reminder that's tomorrow when that's due. And what we saw was a drop all the way down to 14%, and it consistently stayed around there. You can see that on the bottom tail there from February on. We saw those people who had asked for more time to pay are keeping their arrangements. Now, that's money that KUA is getting when it's supposed to get it, not down the road. So we're not floating these big loans, if you will, of unpaid bills. The customer is staying in good standing with us. They're keeping their power on. So it's a win-win for us and for the customer. And it's just a simple little text that nobody minds. And the customers are showing us that they actually prefer that notification method over, an email or a phone call and so forth. So that's been great. Started in February. We saw it drop. It's almost flatlined. It'll probably go up a little bit. But when you compare, looking at this chart here, how typically valleys equal valleys and mountaintops equal mountaintops, not so anymore. We've got, this is all COVID that you're seeing, in this last bit here. We're seeing a bunch of people who are, getting extensions, but they're not running up a bunch of disconnects. They're paying on time. So that's good. But please keep in mind, what y'all have done for the Good Neighbor Fund today is fantastic, because there are, when we're doing 6,000 of these in a month, again, that's over 1,000 a week, 1,000 customers a week reaching out to us saying, I need more time, and we're able to do that. So fantastic. Thank you for doing that. on behalf of our customers, of which I am one. Also, on the portal, we're going to be adding, this was an idea from Ray Hemphill. We had it in there in the hopper, but it wasn't quite ready, and now we're almost ready to launch this. And that was when you log into the portal to see your consumption. Wouldn't it be great if I could pay my bill in here, too, and not have to log in separately over on the e-bill side? Boy, that I wish it was as easy as it sounded, but it was horrible. And it's been vendor soup, about four vendors involved in making that happen, and all the integration and contracts that you can imagine. So we're almost there. We are testing now. And once that's ready, and only when it's ready, because we're affecting almost 60% of our customers with this who are on e-bill now, 60%, y'all. So with 60% of your customers are going to be affected by a change, it needs to be right. So we're moving forward with that. And I think it'll be probably September or October when we have that out for the customers to see. Let's talk a little bit about the customer experience. You may have seen these things downstairs in the lobby. For those coming into the lobby, we've got the new displays. We've had these monitors up for a while. We put a lot of this in right when COVID kicked in, so it all just had COVID, you know, stuff in big rotation. Not very compelling, not interesting when you know to put your mask on. So what we have done is we've taken the videos. Tiffany picked the ones that were the most relevant and sort of evergreen, so they don't lose their relevance in terms of when you're in the lobby and seeing something that's informative. But these are the videos that you've done on YouTube, those Q4 videos. So it'll be you, the board members. We've turned the volumes down so they don't interrupt with business. And we put English and then subtitle versions of subtitles of Spanish and English in the video. So while you're standing there in line or sitting there waiting for them to call your name, you're getting information from KUA about KUA's services from KUA's leadership, which is fantastic. We used to show Channel 13 News. I don't know why. We just always did. We're not doing that anymore. We're showing this. So it's you guys on the main screens talking to our customers about our products, our services, the upcoming events. All of that will be available now. And again, not invasive in terms of audio, but they can read them in their choice of language. It'll just rotate through. So that's kind of a fun upgrade.
Good idea. I saw you in the lobby as I was coming in, Brian, and I was wondering why you were on the TV.
Yes, it's like our own KUA TV.
Attention.
Yeah.
Intercom. So with that, when customers sitting waiting, you know how we have the glass now and everybody goes from the sitting area up, they don't come out and get them like they used to. We added an intercom system so they can call the customer by name. Even with all those cool screens we designed, as much as we thought it was going to be so easy, you know, your name's blinking and come to the window now. And some folks get on their phone and they're just not really catching that it's their turn. So they can hit that. They don't have an electric buzzer. So they're like, if we could just tell them, hey, Mr. Jones, we're ready for you to come now. So that we built that in and now they can call them by name, which is great. And we're testing a new hosting platform on Amazon for KUA.com. Let's talk a little bit about KUA.com because we are getting a lot of traffic there. The website serves us well. With all those countries I told you about that our customers are coming from and all the 24-hour service that they expect to start a business with us or pay their bills, this is 2 years ago, really, from August 2019 to August 2020. You can see in March, right around the time the pandemic started to pick up, we crossed over that 100,000 visit a month mark. That's a significant change for a website. That's a lot of traffic. But this is now the year after, and as you can see, we went over 100,000 and we never went back. 1.5 million page views a year. And again, 14 countries, those are countries, it's 75 countries that visit our website a year. But 14 of them are actual people who are coming back and making payments and interacting with us long term. So that's a fantastic tribute to tech, but it also means that those customers are able to do business remotely for they can chat with us, they can send emails, they can fill out forms, they can initiate service, and of course pay their bill and now view their consumption, which is another piece that's coming with the portal. All great success stories for tech. On the road, we're going to be speaking at the APPA Conference for Customer Connections in Phoenix. We're going to be talking about texting. It's very much similar to the presentation we just made at CS Week in Tampa last month. I was there along with our partner TextPower talking about some of the things I've shared with you in terms of how texting has radically improved certain processes for our customers, especially the extension reminders. And also outage notifications, which I didn't get into much today, but we're seeing a big drop in that saturation where the phone switch fills up and now nobody can get through. That's a rarity now because we're using texting more and customers can use that instead of the old standard, which was to call KUA when your power's out. In fact, one of our dispatchers was sharing with me anecdotally, he just said, you know, when I send out that text now to tell customers that the power's out at this location and it's everybody who's affected, he goes, I can see the calls coming in, and they just drop to nothing. Almost as soon as the text goes out, I see them all hanging up because they have that thought in their mind, those three things, right? Do they know the power's out? Are they coming? And how long is it going to take? We tell them all that in the first message, and then we follow up. So that's gone really well. And with that, what did we learn at CS Week? Well, I thought I'd bring back this sort of theme that was very popular through a lot of the classes and also something very indicative of what we do here at KUA. And it was this, this sort of quote that came from one of IBM's golden children. But it was the idea that if I were to ask each of you, what's the best customer service experience you've ever had in your life? Something would pop into your mind. It would become that gold standard in your mind of that was the best, whether it was an airline flight or a restaurant or whatever the thing was. There's going to be an idea in your mind of what the best experience was. And the idea is once you have that best experience, that becomes your minimum expectation. Well, to be impressed anyway. You know you're not going to get it everywhere. But it becomes your minimum expectation for being impressed. And when we look at the things that we're doing in our community, technologically reaching out to our customers now in 14 countries, all of these things that we do at KUA, in my opinion, is it any wonder that the numbers that we see from the surveys are as high as they are? Because the minimum expectation from KUA is typically the gold standard for everybody else. And we're doing that in stride and still trying to improve. But that was, again, it was that whole idea of how Amazon became Amazon and phenomenal customer service, phenomenal focus on the customer, all through CS Week. But this I thought I would bring back because I thought it was very compelling and very telling about how we are as well. And with that, I'll take any questions.
I have a couple of them. It's running late. I'll keep it short. Sue, you might be able to answer that. From the time an individual doesn't make a payment to the time he gets disconnected, how long does that take? Is that two payments, one payment? How long does it take?
Okay, are we talking about the actual disconnection?
Yeah.
Once they're on the disconnect list, once they're eligible for disconnection and it's time to disconnect them, it's within 60 seconds.
No. I'm referring to, say, an individual doesn't not pay his.
Okay, how long? What's the time frame?
What's the time frame? Does 30 days later you go into that goes into effect or? One payment, two payments.
I have it in my head, but I'll probably get it wrong. I'll let Susan tell you.
That's why I call Sue.
So from the bill date, it's due in 19 days. Day 19, it's considered late, and customers are sent a reminder notice, and they have 5 more days, and then they're eligible for interruption.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. And a little follow-up on the...
So you have to pay your bill today. Today's your 19th day.
I still got 2 days.
We'll discuss that later.
I still got 2 days. The individual that gets home at midnight, and you said earlier, and they could pay, and you said it couldn't charge up within a minute. Do they have to pay? Is it a full payment? Is it a partial payment?
It needs to be the full payment, the amount that's due. Nothing that would be on a new bill, but the amount that was due from the previous bill.
Okay. And could I assume that most folks that are in that position probably won't have the funds to do it over the phone and probably have to come in person to make some type of payment?
It depends. As Jeff described, if they just forgot, then they may have the funds. A lot of times they'll find access to some way to pay, whether it's a credit card or something where they may not have the cash, but they can still get the power restored. And yes, they would wait until the next day to contact us. We do a lot of, not a lot, we handle emergency calls individually on a case-by-case basis. If they were to call late at night and there were issues, we would reconnect the power and deal with the details the next day.
Okay, so there is someone besides the automatic. Human being.
Yes, through dispatch. So it truly needs to be an emergency, but absolutely. And we have always erred on the side of the customer.
Okay, because I'm assuming most people that get the shut off it wouldn't surprise them. Most. Not saying all, but they knew it was coming and so forth. And so I was just trying to
Yes.
They would have received several notifications.
Right. So yeah, they would have known by that, and that individual most likely is not going to be able to pay right over the phone right away. And but that would force them to come into the next business day and make the arrangements to get some type of payment plan.
Correct. Correct. So, but the dispatcher has the ability to restore service, and we'll deal with the details the next day.
Okay, good. Okay. Thank you.
While you're up. To keep on that same topic, for the customers who do extensions, say I can pay part of it now and another part in a couple days. When they go through that process, is there a disconnect, or as long as they make some type of a payment in good faith, they're able to keep their power?
So the key message is for them to contact us before there are any issues.
Right.
And the arrangements can be set up in multiple payments, and as long as they keep those arrangements, there are no interruptions.
But the arrangements have to be within a month. Payments have to be made before the next
bill. We work very hard to not extend the bill into the next bill cycle, because what we found is that ends up really not helping our customers. We had a lot of customers that accumulated so much debt that they really could not get themselves out. So we our guidelines are to collect payment this bill cycle before the next bill is due.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? No. Great questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. So we now go in to hear the attorney.
Good evening, Madam Chair, board members, a couple of federal legislative updates. I might have mentioned there's a growing bipartisan effort in Congress around something called the Cyber Incident Notification Act. It has ramifications for everyone in the electric utility industry, including KUA. If there's a cyber incident, it requires reporting to several agencies, and if you fail to report within the correct amount of time, you can be fined up to $1 million a day. There's growing support for that, and APPA is written. The chairman and chairwoman of the congressional committees in the Senate and the House expressing their concern that, one, these bills do not distinguish between the largest utilities in the country and the smallest. The penalties are the same. The reporting requirements are the same. And what the bill also doesn't recognize is that utilities like KUA already have legal regulatory obligation to report any cyber incident to the North American Reliability Corporation and the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. So it's problematic, but we do think it's going to happen. We think the bill is going to pass. And so an industry consortium consisting of the electric utility industry, the airlines industry, other transportation associations, and natural gas producers ask Congress that if they're going to insist on passing this bill, that they make some improvements. One would allow affected utilities or organizations 72 hours to report the incident. Because the problem is, if you're trying to triage, you're trying to isolate where the incident happened, if you're worried about, well, did we contact the right people, you're not focusing on fixing and addressing the immediate problem. The other thing is, they want the legislation to be more narrowly tailored, so you're only reporting actual incidents and intrusions, not something that is amorphous and you're not sure if there was a penetration or not. Sometimes, again, you don't know that immediately. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully they'll make the bill better, but we do expect that by the end of this year, if not early next year, there will be an enhanced cyber incident. Speaking of...
Can I ask you a question about that?
Sure.
Why not do a percentage? Because then you have it affects large and small about the same.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the utilities are concerned.
Couldn't agree more. If you have 3 million customers impacted versus 3,000, why are you in
threshold?
Yeah, implementing the same penalty.
Has that been introduced to whoever the power's being paid?
APPA has made the argument, but it's...
As a percentage?
No, APPA has made the argument you're treating all utilities the same, no matter what their size.
Maybe if they came up with a solution, that might be listened to a little bit.
Very good idea, Gene.
One other update, infrastructure. It looks very, very likely the bipartisan infrastructure bill that we've discussed, which is the hardcore physical infrastructure, it's very likely that's going to pass. The framework for the $3.5 trillion larger social infrastructure bill, which may very well include environmental requirements, it's got a fairly good chance of passing, but the devil will be in those details. There is some opposition by moderate Democrats in both the Senate and the House to the total price tag, and they will be watching the bills closely. But it's very possible we'll definitely, I think, have the bipartisan infrastructure bill, and it is possible we'll get something considerably larger.
Thank you. Any questions for the lawyer? Now we hear the general manager.
Hey, I'm just going to, you see your board reminders, I'm just going to point out that second one. Next month, the board employee appreciation luncheon. Typically happened in February, didn't happen this past February. You guys directed us to do it in October, so we're going to do it before the board meeting between 11 and 2, and it'll be over at the Davis Center this year. So look forward to seeing everyone there. And outside of that, I wish our chair an early happy birthday.
Thank you.
And it's good to have you back.
Thank you very much. Directors? Starting with you, Ray, any questions, any comments?
Only comments, no questions. I'm very honored to be a part of this company and this board. I see all the work that KUA does with the community, partnering up with Junior Achievement and everything else, and it's very humbling to see such a company that's in this community do so much for just across the board from young kids and all the way up. So just wanted to point that out because it really settled with me today.
Thank you. Ray?
Yes, I would like to sort of piggyback on what Raymond said. But for all the employees that might be listening, you do not really know how much you all get that is above and beyond most of the enterprises in the United States. I've worked for many an organization, and nobody provides the incentives, et cetera, that KUA does. So consider yourself extremely fortunate, and please take advantage of these chances for improvement.
I couldn't agree more. And I will speak to that after the other directors. Manny?
Go ahead. I just want to, I don't know if you're going to do it, remind about next month's election for the board office, which is going to be held next month in October. And just for a point of information, food for thought, I probably will be making a motion. We don't have to discuss it, obviously, but I'm probably going to be making a motion to for the board officers to remain in the same position for another year. Just throwing that out. And have a good month. We'll see you next month.
Thank you. Jeannie?
Nothing.
Thank you. So adding to what you said, it has been my belief from day one since I came to KUA that besides the fact that number one is a wonderfully run company, it operates perfect, and it has been operating perfect for a long, long time, so it's wonderful to know that. it is a very good company for the employees. And so I don't want to make it sound like I don't appreciate you, because I do, all of you employees. But you need to probably realize how good KUA is to you, and understand and know that, so that you feel that you are working for the number one company in Osceola County. And thank you. Thank you for your service to KUA and to the community and to the customers, but always have that in the background. Thank you.
Well said.
Mayor?
No, I don't have much, but I do appreciate what you do with the constituents, with the clients, because as not a politician, as a community advocate, I've been working with a lot of customers, and I know how everything works, and you're doing a great job. I've got to admit, you're doing a very good job with the constituents and with the neighborhood program and everything. I commend you for the job that you're doing.
Yeah, one quick example. Jeannie is also a witness to this, that I got a phone call in the middle of the night from a tenant who had problems, was being abused. And so we called the community assistance, and they have been helping her. And so I know that underneath that is also KUA.
Yes.
So it's wonderful. It's just plain wonderful. Thank you very much, everyone. Until next time, meeting adjourned.